Oh, we're here, and police chief is just admonishing Gracie that his dog would already be laying down, and I thought I was doing good, but what the heck. Gracie's here. She's going to lay down any minute now, and we're going to have a great conversation with Police Chief Gerald Brooks. And I tell you what, it is a great honor to be able to sit down across from the table, have some conversation here today. So welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me.
It is you have an unbelievable job going on right now here in Greenwood, and I can't imagine how it is to be in your shoes and see day in and day out the things that are happening out there. And I'm sure there's more than even that makes the news that we don't know about that you're dealing with.
Well, we've got our hands full nowadays. There's no question about that.
Sure. But first off, I want to talk a little bit about you. When you were growing up, what did you want to do? What did you want to be?
You know, the truth is probably more than anything, and I'll admit considering other things, but I had an interest in law enforcement from an early age.
Really? What, yes. What was the, what, where were the influences from?
Well, when I was growing up, one of my parents' best friends was a man named Sonny Cooper, and he was chief deputy sheriff for Greenwood County. Later, he left the sheriff's office and was a lieutenant at SLED, but most of the time I was growing up, he was chief deputy sheriff for Greenwood County, and lived right down the street from us. He had a son about my age, and we played together, and we're in scouts together, and he was one of the scout masters. And my parents looked up to him, and I guess I looked up to him. And he, to a degree, took me under his wing. Whenever he took his son places, he would always take me places. And we saw some things and went some places that a lot of not a lot of other kids had an opportunity to do. And the portion of his work that I saw just really interested me, and I guess the rest is history.
Absolutely. And then you graduated from Piedmont Tech with a degree in criminal justice.
That's right.
And then went on to the Citadel.
Well, actually, it was just the reverse. I first went to the Citadel.
Okay.
Came back and went to work at the sheriff's office, and when I was there, they had a program where they would offer some incentive pay, but only for a degree in criminal justice at Piedmont Tech, because Piedmont Tech was kind of new at that time, and I guess the sheriff's office was trying to support that program. You know, and I went to the sheriff and mentioned, you know, I've already got this other degree. Doesn't it count? And the bottom line was, no, it didn't count. You got to go to Piedmont Tech and get that degree. And fortunately, I was able to transfer a lot of courses, and so instead of taking the full 2 years, I was able to get that degree in a shorter period of time. But I knew I was on the right track then, because I have never been one to really enjoy a classroom. I was always the guy looking out the window, so the teacher had to move me over to the hallway side of the room. I was interested in what was going on outdoors, not what was in the classroom, and it was really that way all the way through school. But when I got to Piedmont Tech, majoring in criminal justice, I was very interested in everything they taught and made good grades for the first time in my life, and I think I knew I was on the right track.
That's terrific. You have been the police chief, what, since 1993, is that right?
1991.
Wow. You've seen a lot of changes, I would expect, here.
Sure have. You know, particularly if you go all the way back to the beginning of my law enforcement career, which was January 1st, 1976. I hate to say it, but that was before the fax machine. And I can remember being at a chief's meeting in Florence, and someone came and made a presentation to us about a facsimile machine. And what the man told us was, he said, for instance, you could be right here in Florence, and he said, Charleston could be working on a case and need a set of fingerprints. And instead of driving those fingerprints to Charleston, you could run them through this facsimile machine, and via the telephone lines, you can transmit those fingerprints to Charleston, and officer in Charleston could receive them and actually be looking at a set of fingerprints. You know, we were all thinking, that's not you can't do that over a phone line. You might can send a voice over a phone line, but you can't send something, a photograph or fingerprint. You can't do that. And they demonstrated it for us, and we thought,
you still didn't believe it, right? Or you did?
And so nowadays, every once in a while, somebody will say, you know, can you fax me something? And now we say, can I just email it to you? Now, we about have put away the fax machines, but we've seen a lot of changes.
Absolutely. We've seen a lot of changes in Greenwood. You know, it used to be, it was always a lovely day in the neighborhood, wasn't it?
That's right.
And people didn't lock their doors.
Right.
And now today, I mean, we've got so many issues that I want to talk about here today and see if we can get some input from you. I know that one of the things that you're always looking for is intel coming back and that the public can be an invaluable source of giving information. So we're going to be talking about all these issues right here with Police Chief Gerald Brooks right here on WCRS. Hey, if you've got a question for Gerald Brooks, don't hesitate to give us a call, 229-7984. That's 229-7984.
Gold, gold, more precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
All right, we're back here at Sharp Facets Gallery right here on the 72 bypass. I am talking to Police Chief Gerald Brooks. You know, there have been so much in the news, and of course, one of the issues that they have been, SLED has released a report. I know a lot of people looked at it and said, oh my God, what's happening in Greenwood? It says that Greenwood has a very high rate of violent crimes, actually behind Charleston. It says the most violent crimes, and this is actually from the Index Journal, the most violent crimes happened in Charleston at a rate of 51.6 crimes per 10,000 residents, but the county with the highest violence rate was Greenwood, with 188.3 crimes per 10,000 people. I know that you are in the city, but what do you have to say about some of that, some of the information?
Well, first, we do have violent crime in Greenwood. There's no getting around that. No ifs, ands, buts. We do have violent crime in Greenwood. We have a lot more of it than we would like. Having said that, I think we're fairly comparable with other communities our size in South Carolina and in the Southeast. We've long known that the Southeast has a higher violent crime rate than almost any other portion of the country. Now, there are some exceptions. There's some certain cities elsewhere in the country that have a pretty high
Chicago,
crime rate.
Chicago, Detroit.
That's right. Oh, yeah, they've got it. But if you look at larger regions, if you compare the entire Southeast to the Northeast and other places, and you do it per capita, mm-hmm. the South just has more violent crime.
Why is that? We like our guns.
I guess it's cultural in large part is cultural, and you see that if you travel and go other places. That I'm telling you, people are different other places.
What do you mean by people are different? I can remember being in Washington, D.C. I was actually up there right after Osama bin Laden had been killed. I mean, I was up there that week, and I can remember seeing the police on horses, on motorcycles, on bicycles, and carrying guns across their chest. I've been in New York City where I've seen them with guns, and I mean, it's very freaky how it makes you feel.
That's right. And if you look at officers, police officers per capita, you'll find that a lot of those places are a lot better staffed than we are. Here in the South, for some reason, we try to get by with as few police officers as possible. And sometimes we pay the price for that.
Well, I did see where, city council has going to be putting, or you have put on, one or two more officers.
Well, for our 2013 budget, mm-hmm. They found funding or came up with funding to add one police position. And we're using that to have a gang investigator. And then recently, they found a way to free up some additional funds. And I think our appreciation goes out to CPW because they played a role in that.
Yes.
But at any rate, they came up with funding for two more police positions. And in the council meeting Monday night, City Council approved an ordinance that amended our 2013 budget and provided us with two more police positions. So we'll be looking for a few good men or women to take those positions and have us better staffed.
How many people work in the police department?
Sworn officers, we have 55 sworn officers. Mm-hmm. We've also got just a handful of civilian employees, such as a parking enforcer, animal control officer, some records clerks, some secretaries. And then we have a few part-time positions where we have some people in the community that serve as school crossing guards. And that's a heck of a job where you work 45 minutes in the morning and 45 minutes in the afternoon, and you're required to be in uniform on both occasions. It pretty well limits people to what they can do. You know, if you could work 45 minutes in the morning and have the rest of the day off and go where you want to go and do what you want to do.
Sure.
But they're kind of tethered close to home because in the afternoon they've got to come right back out and do another 45 minutes. So it's pretty hard to find those people. Sure. We're real happy to have them, though.
Now, as far as for this size area that we are in Greenwood, and of course that Greenwood Police covers the city, how many people do you feel, police officers, do you need? What would be optimal?
Well, I hope I don't get in trouble for this.
Okay.
But I'm committed to honesty, so I'm going to give you an answer. This will surprise a lot of people, but the city of Anderson is one of the most comparable to Greenwood cities in South Carolina. If you and I'm looking at two areas. If you look at the geographical area, Greenwood is slightly larger than Anderson. We have a little over 16 square miles in the city of Greenwood. Anderson has a little over 15 square miles. So geographically, we're pretty doggone close. Mm-hmm. If you look at the population, Anderson has just over 26,000. We have about 23,500. So if you look at the population and the geography, we are very, very comparable to the city of Anderson. City of Greenwood, at the beginning or at the end of 2012, we had 54 police officers. On that same day, City of Anderson had 94 police officers.
Almost double.
Almost double. So I'll tell you, our officers are some of the hardest working police officers in South Carolina.
Wow.
We would love to have the staff that the City of Anderson has. And I'm not talking about their people. I'm talking about their numbers.
Sure.
Because I would not trade our people for police officers anywhere. But we would love to have that type of number and see what type of service we could provide here in Greenwood.
With the murders and stuff, and particularly with them being right outside the police right around the backside there and everything, why would the numbers be able to decrease the murder rates and the things, the violence that have been happening? And not only that, we're looking at, I understand, four gangs here in Greenwood.
Well, in terms of numbers of police officers, first is always the visibility, a police presence. Rarely does a murder occur, you know, outside on the streets when you've got a police officer within sight. And so the more visible we are in the communities, we can't help but think that serves as a deterrent. But then also there's the follow-up, the investigation. Our people are just, they have more work than they can do. And there are honestly some cases that aren't getting looked at, aren't getting investigated, because they don't have the high enough priority and we don't have enough personnel to do it. And fortunately, our city manager, our mayor and council are aware of that, and that's why they're trying to grow the police department. But it won't happen overnight, particularly in these tough economic times.
Absolutely. Well, speaking of, you said visibility and everything, since that murder that happened over there on, what is it, Tabor Street?
Tabor Street.
Very close.
That's right.
How are you handling covering those areas where you know you have higher crime and the murders and whatnot?
Well,
are you able to be out there? I mean, are you able to be out there, or do we have foot patrols anymore, or bicycles, or horse patrol?
No, we don't have the manpower to do that. When you have limited manpower, you have to deploy them as best you can, and the one thing the automobile does is it gets us to the scene more promptly. And if you had an awful lot of police officers, then you'd have a number of them in vehicles, and then you'd have a number of them doing foot patrols or bicycle or something like that. But when you've got the limited numbers, you know, people call 911. They really expect, when they hang up, they expect to hear a siren in the background and a police officer there in 2 or 3 minutes.
Sure.
And if you've got your officers on foot, then you're not going to have that type of response time when you're covering 16 square miles, you know, with basically a handful of officers at one time.
But certain areas are definitely much worse than other areas as far as crime and this type of thing. So do you have extra people patrolling those areas?
Well,
or you're not extra, but do you have, excuse me, I know we're short on people, but do we have people in that area more covering that areas more, or do we have to divide it amongst all areas for the city?
I'm going to try to answer this question without offending anyone, but I'll begin by telling you that we've divided the city into what we call patrol zones, and we make sure that we have at least one officer in each zone at all times. Having said that, in every zone, there's also an area that we know is a problematic area. It's the high crime area in that zone. And so the officer that's out there is naturally going to focus his time or concentrate in that high crime area.
Sure.
And I'm going to make an analogy here again. I hope this doesn't hurt anybody's feelings. But in addition to police services, the city also provides sanitation services. And they deploy the containers according to the trash that's generated. And so if it's a single-family residence, they put out one roll cart. If it's a business, then they may put out a dumpster. If it's an industry, then they put out multiple dumpsters.
Sure.
And so we have to look at our crime that way. When it's a high-crime area, you know, more police officers. And when you've got a very stable, quiet neighborhood without much of a problem, sure, we're going to try to patrol that neighborhood because of the folks are paying taxes. But we can't really justify having the police presence in that neighborhood when you've got another one that things are hopping.
Absolutely. Well, you know, they talked about violent crimes and everything. You brought a graph here that really shows the number of crimes back in, what was it, 1997 was like 803.
That's right.
And you've got the graph that shows 2012 at 342. So that definitely is a decrease over time.
Well, you know, I said I wasn't the best student, and I certainly was not a math major. But I worked on that, and as I see it, it represents a 57% decrease. Back in 97, when it was at its peak, that was really when we in Greenwood were experiencing what I would call the crack epidemic. It had hit other parts of the country earlier, but it kind of reached its peak there in 1997 in Greenwood, and our violent crimes had risen because of that. And we had to change the way we were doing business to drive those violent crimes down.
How did you change the way you were doing business?
Well,
I mean, by more people, more, you know.
You know, I'm going to be a little honest. See, I'm going to be vague. It's, if you were asking the
head football coach
at Clemson.
How'd you win that game?
But his playbook, he's not going to give you his playbook. He doesn't want the opposition to be aware of it.
Sure.
But we did, we made some changes, and coincidentally, that's also about the time that we were nearing achieving accreditation for the first time. And that accreditation was a tool that enabled us to, improve our department and bring it in up to some standards that we had not met before. And I think that we became a better police department. We had better policy and procedures. We had some better strategy and tactics. Our personnel, my hat's off to them. I don't think many people realize how wonderful our police officers are. In fact, when somebody is considering coming to work for us, we don't recruit too hard because we don't want somebody we had to beg into law enforcement. We want somebody that has a burning desire to be in law enforcement. But when I talk to those people, I tell them probably the best thing about working at the Greenwood Police Department is who your coworkers are going to be. We've got some fine men and women. I'm exceptionally proud of them. But they've worked hard, done a good job, and they are diligent and dedicated. And I believe that we make a difference.
Absolutely, you do. Hey, I am here with Police Chief Gerald Brooks. If you've got a question, don't hesitate to call us 229-7984. That's 229-7984. I hope you're enjoying this conversation. I certainly am here today. We're going to join the news in progress. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Rob Gilchrist, voice of the Emerald Vikings, and I want to tell you about Romac Trophies and Signs. Romac Trophies and Signs maintains specialized service and offers their customers personalized and customized attention. Are you looking for a special way to reward your employees or team? Try a trophy, acrylic award, plaque, or medal. Romac Trophies and Signs adds your company or organization's logo and engrave your award to make it more personal. Visit their huge showroom in the Hampton Place Shopping Center and let Romac Trophies and Signs help you select the perfect gift for retirement or employee recognition. Are you coaching a team and want to recognize your players? Romac Trophies and Signs custom builds trophies on site to fit your budget and your individual needs. Romac is a proud sponsor of WCRS and sponsors the Player of the Week for Emerald Viking football. That's Romac Trophies and Signs at the Hampton Place Shopping Center in Greenwood. Call them today at 864-229-9277.
Oh, that's right. We are right back here at Sharp Facets Gallery. I tell you what, we are here with Police Chief Cheryl Brooks. We definitely have some issues to talk about, but we were just talking about off the air about the number, how many hours our police officers work, and what were you telling me about that?
Well, their scheduled shift is 12 hours, and 12 hours is a long time to be at work, particularly when it's a stressful job like police work. But the truth is they work a lot more than 12 hours. They've got to come in early because they've got an inspection, they've got roll call, sometimes they've got a little roll call training, but they need to know what happened in the last 12 hours before they take the streets. And then they've got to get into their patrol zone a little bit early so that the officer that's in that zone can be properly relieved and return to the station without there being a gap in coverage. And then they work their 12-hour shift, and you're probably familiar with Murphy's Law. And because of Murphy's Law, when it's quitting time, you're right in the middle of handling a call, whether it's an accident on the bypass or something else, but you can't just stop and turn it over to somebody else. You've got to complete that call. And then you're not through. You've got a report to write. And after you've got your report written, it's got to be submitted to a supervisor to be approved. And chances are that supervisor is going to want you to tweak it a little bit, polish it up, make sure it meets the standards. And so then you maybe don't rewrite it, but you certainly go in and improve it a little bit improve it. And then it finally gets approved. And then you and your supervisor finally get off duty. So they're scheduled to work 12 hours, but it's pretty rare that they put in 12 hours and are able to go right home.
Sure. So that means, and back in the day when you first started, I guess maybe you weren't as busy as you are now.
Well, during the break we were talking, when I got started in law enforcement, we actually occasionally had a slow day, and there are no slow days now. There certainly some days are slower than others, but the officers are busy. Basically, they're going from call to call to call, and when they're not answering a call, then they're writing a report. The other thing I was telling you about was the difference in perspectives. The new young police officer comes to work and he's charged up, ready to go. And honestly, a lot of them, they want something to happen. I don't know whether it's going to be a pursuit or a bank robbery, but I'm here, I'm ready to go. I want something to happen today. Meanwhile, the supervisor comes to work and he's saying, man, I hope nothing big happens today. We just need a quiet day. No problems, no excitement. Let's just make it through our 12 hours safely and go home. So there's a different perspective there, but there's a place for both of those.
Absolutely. Well, we are talking with Police Chief Gerald Brooks. You know, there's been a lot in the news. The crime that has happened, that shooting over there at the apartment complex, the gangs, this is the thing that I want to find out if you can share some information with us. For years, I've heard the gangs are coming. Sounds like the gangs are here. When we start giving them names, what, South Side, North Side, the different gangs, what can you tell us about what is happening with gangs? That's a scary thing to me, just to hear the word gangs in Greenwood, South Carolina.
Well, we certainly do have gangs. I would submit that any other community of our size or larger also has gangs. So it's not unique to Greenwood. It's just what it means is Greenwood is like the other places. We have gangs. For the most part, our gangs consist of young people.
What age group are you talking about, roughly?
Probably the predominant membership is maybe from about 17 to 27. Mm-hmm. Having said that, there are a few people a little older that have affiliation with the gang, and then there are people younger, 16, 15, 14, 13 years old. Sometimes they don't have the same stature among the other gang members, but they're young people. And, we know this, young people want to belong. And when there's a good family, sometimes they're satisfied belonging to that good family. and there's proper parenting, then they do things. They join the Boy Scouts, they join the YMCA, they're members of a church, but they have that sense of belonging. It's not just me and I'm alone and isolated, but I belong here and we're all in this together. A lot of the people that are joining gangs are people that don't come from a stable home. They don't have a mother and a father and siblings that all work together and care for one another. And they're looking for an association. They're going to join something, and by and large, they either join something positive or they join something negative. And
so the gangs are actually fulfilling a need for these young people. In a way, yeah.
They are. They're going to be included or they're going to be left out. And nobody likes to be left out. And so, like I say, everybody, particularly young people like that, they want to be part of something.
Well, I know that you and Tony Davis, Sheriff Tony Davis, work together on a lot of things. And I even understand you guys have lunch pretty often to get together and talk about things.
That's right. We do. And that's, I really believe that that's beneficial to the people here in this Greenwood community. You know, the bad guys don't pay any attention to jurisdictional boundaries. They don't know what's in the city and what's not in the city. They're going to do their thing. And if the sheriff and I don't work together and don't cooperate, then we're not as efficient or as effective as we could be. And I would submit, a lot of times we talk to groups and I tell people that his constituents and my constituents are exactly the same people. You may live in the county and think that you're the sheriff's constituent, but if you come to the mall, if you bring your child to Emerald High School, if you come to the hospital, if you come to Sharp Facets, then you're coming into the city. Likewise, you may live in the city and say, well, the city police protect me. But if you go to Walmart, if you take your child to Greenwood High School, you've gone into the county. So he and I are serving exactly the same population, so we may as well work together and do it as seamlessly as possible.
Now, I know one of the things that y'all have even are sharing some services together, I do believe, working on drugs and some of these other issues, you've been able to partner up, shall we say. That's worked very well for giving you more emphasis and more bang for your buck.
That's right. The two things that we started first was, first off, we combined forces to have a SWAT team. The truth is, the Greenwood Police Department is not large enough to have a SWAT team. The Greenwood Sheriff's Office is not large enough to have a SWAT team. But unfortunately, Greenwood is large enough to need a SWAT team. And so we've combined personnel to have a SWAT team, and that's worked very well. With our drug enforcement unit, we combined people to have a drug enforcement unit. The drug dealers, and that's who we're really targeting, is the drug dealers, again, move across the jurisdictional lines. And a lot of our work involves things such as surveillance. And if you're surveilling someone and then who's in the city, and as he heads out into the county, you have to stop at the line, you don't know when he's going to come back or what street he's going to come back through. And so it hampered our effectiveness. But by working together, we're able to be more efficient, more effective, and I think the public benefits from that. If you follow the news, you may have seen that our city council just authorized us to sign a violent crimes task force agreement. And the sheriff and I are working, and actually we began this several months ago, but we're working to form a violent crimes task force in hopes that we can be more effective, more efficient in solving some of these violent crimes also.
And that brings me to the next point. You know, we had Newtown, the shooting there. There was a lot of concern about our school children. What do you see as far as should we have an officer in each school? I mean, I don't think that's possible, is it, by what you told me here today? So what do you think the answer for Greenwood is now, since we're talking our local people here?
Well, you know, I'm just the police chief.
I know.
So I probably won't have a lot of input into this. That decision will be made by people above my pay grade, obviously. But I do have strong feelings about it. And I would say I'd be glad to share those. Instead, let me tell you that I'll share those reluctantly.
Okay.
Because you've got me on there, and I don't think I have a way to turn this microphone off. There's been a lot of discussion about what's the best way, and people talk about arming teachers and other things like that. But I can tell you that if you're going to take school security seriously, real seriously, if you're going to protect the school from what we call the active shooter, then you've got to realize that in any armed conflict, and we'll call it a gun battle, but in any armed conflict or gun battle, the key to winning is to have superior firepower. You've got to have better training. You've got to have better numbers when possible, and you need better weaponry. And so what I'm telling you there is that if you're going to arm someone, that someone can't be armed with a little small handgun and be any place on the school grounds when this armed intruder comes in and he's carrying what the media refers to as an assault-style weapon. Mm-hmm. And so some people, I think, maybe envision, well, there'll be a nice, friendly police officer there at the door, and we all know that a police officer has a firearm on his side. That firearm, when no one else has a gun, makes you feel pretty powerful. But when the guy approaching you has an M16, it's no good at all. And so you mentioned earlier, I believe it was during the break, being in some cities in the Northeast and seeing the officers there armed with the assault weapons and stuff. That's what it would take. And bear in mind that you've got to secure the school so that there's only one access point, and then that armed officer has to be at that access point, and he's got to be very vigilant. And if he leaves to go to the men's room, if he leaves to go to the cafeteria, you've lost that level of protection. And I don't know if that's people. I don't know if that's what they want. I don't know if the public wants to afford that or pay for that. But I think that's what it would take to provide the level of security that some of us would like to see.
Absolutely. Well, I know that, you know, when we talk about what happened there, I spoke to so many people outside our area who had no idea that Jamie Wilson was something that had happened right here. My contention is that the internet in our 24 news cycle is making it very difficult because things just get out there and there's so much copycat and this type of thing. What do you think about the effect of that?
I agree with you 100%. We used to be so isolated. Something that happened in Los Angeles, we didn't even know about it. And many of us probably didn't even care about it. And it might have been good for us that we didn't hear or see those things. But with technology, the news reporting has changed. And now we're actually seeing events that happen on the other side of the country or many, many states away. We're seeing them real time. And
well,
it's
like
not
Boston, just like what happened at the Boston Marathon.
That's right. And in fact, there are times that a person in Greenwood knows more about what's happening in Boston than a person in Boston, because the person in Boston is maybe they're in the shower, maybe they're mowing the grass, and something has happened a mile or two away, and they have no clue that it has happened. Yet someone in Greenwood is right there in front of their television, whether they're watching CNN News or Fox News or the Today Show or whatever. And they're seeing it unfold real time. And I agree with you. I think there's a lot of copycat going on. People see it, and they have the idea. And they bounce around in the head, and then fortunately some of them act out on it.
Absolutely. Hey, you know, we are here with Police Chief Gerald Brooks. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Gold dust at my feet on the sunny side of...
This year will be a simpler year. One fine gift to last a lifetime. From Mother Earth with love, a diamond to light the way and create the energy to keep your love alive. Only at Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood, 229-6276. Oh, that's right. We're right back here at Sharp Facets Gallery. I have Police Chief Gerald Brooks with us. And, you know, we were talking about how you would handle the schools there. That's a... That right there tells you it would take a lot of money to have our students, shall we say, protected. And even with great protection, like you said, if he went to the bathroom or went to the cafeteria, you could have unprotected moments. And I don't think anybody is suggesting that we're in that violent area, but Newtown was not a violent area. I mean, who would have thought that in that community that somebody could walk in and do that? But one of the things that I did want to discuss was what we're trying to grow Greenwood. We're trying to make it a community that new business comes to and people move to and everything. And, you know, it seems like if not every day, every other day, there's drug people being picked up and their mugshots are in the paper. And when we do have a shooting or we do have a murder or something like that, that information is out there. How are we going to stem the tide of this? I mean, it seems to me in the last two or three years that we're just seeing more and more in the paper. How is this going to work?
Well, I don't know if I'll do a good job of explaining this over the radio because I'm kind of a visual person. I like to draw and sketch things out. My wife says I'm bad about doing that on a napkin. We're in a restaurant having a conversation. I pull out and start drawing on the napkin. And I don't think your viewers could see me drawing on a napkin right now. But if let me put this into, I guess I'll call it three segments. The segment in the middle is what we in law enforcement are dealing with. And that is we're investigating the crimes that occur, and we're arresting the people that commit those crimes. Now we're right there in the middle. On the front end, before it reaches that point, there are human beings, babies that are born, and they're five months old, and then they're 5 years old, and 10 years old, and 15 years old, and then a certain percentage of them begin engaging in criminal activity. We were talking about the gangs earlier. So part of the solution is on that before they ever get there. And for the lack of a better term, I say some of them are the result of poor parenting. And so something certainly needs to be done to rear those children in such a fashion that they won't choose a life of crime, but instead will become productive citizens that we can all be proud of. But then on the other side of us, and I'm talking about the other side of the investigation and the arrest, is the remainder of our criminal justice system. And then, unfortunately, I would tell you that our criminal justice system is not functioning the way it was designed to function. In simple terms, our criminal justice system is broken, I guess I should say. Our court dockets are overloaded, so the people we apprehend are often getting out on bond. Sometimes those bonds are ridiculously low. And then they're waiting 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 years before their case ever makes it to court. When they go to court, our judges are under intense pressure from the legislature to not send so many people to prison because the state doesn't want to build more prisons right now. And that's sad because I will tell you the absolute best form of crime prevention that any community can deal in is to determine who the criminals are in your community, arrest them, and send them to the penitentiary. Because when your criminals are in the penitentiary rather than in your community, your crime rate will be exceptionally low. But we're having trouble getting people to the penitentiary. Not that we can't solve the crime, not that we can't make the arrest, but once we make the arrest, it's like a revolving door. They're getting out on bond, the case isn't being heard. When the case is finally heard, it's they're getting this light sentence, and right back out here in the community. It's not unusual. We're arresting people that do these shootings, and it's the third time we've arrested the same person for attempted murder.
How can that be?
Well, it should not be, but it is because our system's not working the way it was designed to work.
So what's the answer? More prisons, more speedy justice system?
Honestly, I think it starts with our state legislature. The problem began, other than to tell you with finances, but sure. The problem began because we had a bottleneck in the system. And that bottleneck was caused by a lack of judges. We did not have enough judges in South Carolina to sit on the bench. The legislature, in their wisdom, decided, well, we'll leave it just like that. Because they know if we hire more judges, then we're going to have to build more prisons. And if we hire more judges, the solicitors are going to need to increase their staff because they're going to be prosecuting more cases. And the public defender's office is going to be, they want their staff increased to be on par with the solicitor's staff. And if you build more prisons, then you've got to hire more prison guards, more correctional officers. And then as people exit, you're going to have more probation and parole officers. And so the legislature realizes as long as we keep our number of circuit judges low, then we're not going to move as many cases through the courts. And if we don't move as many cases through the courts, we won't have to build prisons, hire guards, hire solicitors, hire public defenders. And so that bottleneck didn't happen by accident. It's intentionally that way, and we're suffering from it.
It's almost like it's a sieve, right? The yes, very, ma'am. Yeah, and right there is where everything stops.
That's right.
That is phenomenal. That so you're telling me until we get more prisons, more judges, more on the other side, y'all are kind of stuck.
Well, we are. This has been a long time coming. It wasn't this way when I first got into law enforcement. It wasn't unusual for the court docket in Greenwood County to be somewhere around maybe 300 cases. And bear in mind, those 300 cases weren't all murders and rapes and robberies. There were a lot of things, a third offense, DUI, night hunting, things of that nature. But the court docket was manageable, and there was enough bench time of judges on the bench to hear those cases. Now, if you talk to the solicitor, you may find a docket that they're dealing with 6,000 cases. And when you have a 2-week term of court and an average jury trial takes 3-4 days, you're not going to move many cases. And so the solicitors are under pressure. And I think we've got a wonderful solicitor. Don't misunderstand.
Sure.
I am not knocking our solicitor's office. We've got
There's
a new solicitor.
There's only so much they can do.
I think they're doing a good job with the resources they have, but we're not having court every week. 2 weeks of court, maybe every month, every other month, and maybe the judge isn't available all 5 days, and you've got other matters that come before the court. We're not disposing of the cases, and so those people are getting out on bond. And you know, the sheriff will tell you this.
How about hold that thought 1 second? This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. We're going to hold this over for a few minutes and let's just continue talking. Hey, I own the station. I can do that. Let's talk.
Well, my hat's off to you. I wish I owned the police department.
But you were getting ready to say that the sheriff.
Well, you know, they're doing a jail expansion right now. They're building more bed spaces, but he's full. And so when we arrest someone, they're stuck. They have to look and say, okay, who have we got in jail that we can let out? And they don't have the authority to let it out, but they can take the person before a magistrate and ask for maybe a bond reduction or a PR bond or something. And so here's something that we on the law enforcement side, we want the person behind bars. We want them, including the sheriff. He wants them behind bars.
But he's stuck.
He's got to make room. Somebody else has to, he can't bring one in until he gets one out. And so just like the state hasn't wanted to build more prisons, the county hasn't wanted to build more jail space. And the economy drives it. But I think that sometimes we have to go ahead and invest in those things that we don't particularly want to. You know, some of your infrastructure, it's not maybe polite to talk about your waste treatment facilities and let's put in more sewer lines and things of that nature. But you need to move that stuff.
Sure.
And you need to do something about your waste. You need to do something about sewage. You need to do something about the criminal element.
Well, you know, that is one of the things that we are supposed to make sure is just like the military that falls into police protection and these type of things are things that are part of what the budgets are supposed to be about.
That's right. I think government's first priority is to protect the public, and on the federal level, we look to have a strong military, a strong defense, and on a more local level, we look to have good public safety, which is not just law enforcement. We want good fire protection. We want good EMS services. I think we've got those in Greenwood.
Absolutely. Well, I am so pleased that you came out to talk to us here today. I would love to have you back again, and we'll talk about some more of these issues. I do want to say that, you know, I know it's tough out there. You've got to have a tremendous level of keeping stress down. Do you work out a lot?
Well, I exercise every day. I don't know if I'd call it work out a lot, but I do exercise every day, and it keeps me young. I know you look at my face, you think I'm an old guy, but yeah, I'm really just 29.
And you're not old enough for coffee yet, are you?
Not old enough for coffee yet. Yeah. I may get there one day.
Police Chief Gerald Brooks, thanks so much for coming out today. I certainly appreciate you being here.
Well, thank you. I enjoyed it.
Thank you. All right. This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. Bye-bye, everybody.